Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Get It Off Your Breasts, the podcast which digs into all those issues really getting under your skin.
This week, we're so delighted to be joined by activist and co-founder of the Pink Protest, Grace Campbell. She is amazing and I love this episode. We talk about separating the art from the artist and also our tricky relationship with pubic hair. Welcome back to season two of Get It Off Your Breasts. We are so excited to have the amazing Grace Campbell. So Grace, what topic do you want to get off your breast today?
So after quite a lot of deliberation, I want to get the fact that I'm repulsed by my own pubic hair off of my breasts.
I think this is going to be my favourite topic we've ever discussed on this podcast.
Okay, so basically, there's so many complex things to this conversation because I feel like I wax my pubes and have done since I was like 17 because I want to and because I prefer being hairless. But I'm aware that that came from a place where, like, I remember being at school and it being this thing that you have to shave your pubes, like you have to have no pubes. If like you're going to get with a boy, you can't have pubic hair because boys won't get with you. So that kind of sunk in. And then now at 23, I'm like, okay, do I do it because I want to do it? Or do I do it because I know that a boy won't want to like go down on me or get with me or they'll think differently of me? And I also think the other thing, there's a lot here.
A lot to unpack.
There's a lot to unpack.
Who knew the pews are so deep?
The other thing is that like I feel like as a feminist, am I like ruining my feminist identity in waxing my pubes, and do people expect something differently of me? And also older feminists I've found are really judgmental of women who want to get rid of their pubic hair because they are just simply like, you're doing that because of the patriarchy. And so I have lots of arguments with like my mum's friends about wanting to wax my pubes. Like I was on holiday last summer with some of my mum's friends were there, and I was going to a festival after, so I'd had a wax that day. And like these older, one of these women, she's like a proper old school like feminist. She's like in her 80s and she just started screaming at me. She was like, why did you wax your pubes? And I was like, because I want to, because I'm going on a beach holiday and I don't want there to be any risk of my pubic hair coming out. And they just couldn't get their head around it.
So can I ask you then, so trying to kind of unpack a little bit about what you said, when you go to wax, do you wax or shave?
I wax.
You wax. When you go for wax, do you get like afterwards go like, I really like the way that looks. I'm enjoying the look of my parts now that they are hairless and it looks really good and it makes me feel good about myself? Or do you just go like, phew, I've got rid of my hair. Now I'm not going to get potentially like embarrassed or shamed or whatever. Like what do you think's the stronger?
Well, basically this week I hadn't waxed my pubes for ages and my flat, the other day I was walking around in like a thong. My flatmate, like, she just looked at them because my pubes, they come quite far down and my legs hair are really fair. My leg hairs are really fair. My pubes are really dark. And so, like, my flatmate just, like, her eyes kind of migrated towards my crotch. She was like, they're really long. Like, she wasn't being judgmental. And I was like, I know, I can't believe I've kind of let them get to this. And then I realised, oh shit, I need to get rid of them. But it wasn't like I felt like, I don't know, it just felt like it was time to kind of get rid of them. And then afterwards I looked there and I was like, God, it looks like, it does look like a bald head.
Do you know what, though? It's so funny because I went on a summer holiday last year with like some of my best friends and we were all so different because like one of my friends is just, so she's bald forever. I like the option of like whatever I feel like that sort of month or whatever. But one of my favourite episodes of Sex and the City is like when Samantha has that massive bush, just because I think I was worried that when I was younger, I was doing it just because of worrying about what boys would say because of the rise in porn and the rise in, like, fetishizing, like, hairless women. For me, I was just, like, I went through a real phase of rebelling, and now I'm coming back to what you're saying of actually, no, I'm choosing to do this.
Yeah, and that's the kind of complex thing of it. I think you definitely, porn is a really important thing, because that's where this all stems from with, like, my generation. It's like, boys watch porn from a really young age, and women never have pubic hair, so they're quite confused when you do have pubic hair.
But that's kind of why I was asking you how you feel, because I think, like, so I'm going to, like, fess up and say I'm a full-on 70s bush girl, and I think I'd like to say it's because of my proud feminist badge, but it's actually probably because I'm just really lazy, and I'm like, I don't mind it, so, you know, it's fine. But that's kind of why I was asking you, like, do you actually, like, enjoy the look of it more when it's hairless or, like, all neat or however you wear it? Because if so, then that's your choice to go, I want to look good, I want to feel good about myself, and I like the way it looks. Because I think, like, if you're doing it because you feel you have to, or because you feel like, you know, a boy or even another woman, you know, would think it looks gross, then that's probably the... not wrong reasons, but that's probably quite, like, a bit of a sad reason to do it. But if you're just like, yeah, I love the way it looks now, yeah, then go for it.
I don't, that's the thing, like, I don't actually love the way it looks, I love the way it feels. I love the way it feels, and, like, I do a lot of exercise, so I sweat a lot, I do, like, hot yoga a lot, and so I prefer knowing that, like, I'm hairless. And
do you go full on hairless? Hygienic.
No, I leave a little strip.
Yeah.
It's way more comfortable.
It's much more comfortable. Yeah.
So I think maybe...
Because we were talking earlier about, you know, Catlin Moran's book. That's the first book that I think really kind of points out these little, not little things, but, like, the more ingrained things in society. Like, heels, like, are painful. So that's, like, annoying. The patriarchy made women, like, walk more slowly and be in pain, and they also made us feel like bad about our body hair, but it doesn't mean that you have to go bush to prove a point.
I like the bit where she talks about she, like, lists all the reasons why, like, you should love your pubic hair, and, like, my favorite reason that stuck with me, because she had so many good reasons, but this is the only one I remember, she was like, you can bounce your hand on it like a springy mattress and it just feels really fun, and I'm like, yeah, you can. But I also think, like, saying that, I'm quite lucky. So what you were talking about the kind of spread, the growth down your legs, like, I've never had that. So I'm quite contained anyway.
If you were going on a beach holiday, would you...
I don't need to.
Wax a bit.
Oh, no, really? I don't need to. I'm naturally quite contained, but it's still bushy, but it's like, it won't be seen from someone if I'm wearing a bikini. So maybe I'm just a bit, like, lucky, and it's a sport position to say that in. But I did used to wax when I was younger. And, like, I mean, I think it was a pressure thing. It was a thing of, like, you know, would someone think it looked gross, or, you know, it was just what you do. And I'd say even not just the pubes, it's like you can take that further to, you know, armpit hair and shaving your legs and things like that. I think it's hard for us to even know, because, like, from such a young age, there's such a pressure for women to look hairless, basically, on our bodies. So we might even think we're doing it because we want to, but, like, we don't know how much we've been conditioned.
And that's why it is really complex. Like, you know, there's so many weird complexities within, like, being a feminist, and this is one of them, because I couldn't say whether or not I'm doing it for myself or I'm doing it for men and patriarchy and, like, whatever. I don't have a definitive answer to that. I know I prefer it, but it's fucking painful. Like, the wax I had this week was so painful. And I was lying there. I was like, I'm not seeing anyone at the moment. So, like, I don't really need to be doing this. But, like, I'm here going through excruciating pain.
And I used to thought, but I remember when I used to do it, the thing that I found most uncomfortable was the regrowth. I found, like, it, like, a bit itchy and uncomfortable when it started to grow back again. And then you're like, well, then you have to just, like, go all the time to it. And I don't know. I just was like, why am I doing this? It's, like, expensive. It's painful. It doesn't feel nice when it starts to regrow. And, like, who am I doing it for? Because it's not for me. But I didn't... For me, it didn't feel like it was for me.
But I think as well, with that question, like, can I be a feminist and... Like, the answer is always yes, isn't it? Like, Bridget Minimore, the poet, she wrote something, I think, for The Guardian called, like, can I be a feminist and... ..., and the whole article is basically, like, it's always yes. Because you can always contradict yourself. You can always do whatever you want. But I had just one question. With the pubes thing, the one thing that I always thought of is, and someone said this to me ages ago, is it good for, like, a young child to, like, see a woman's body, like their mum, like, have no hair on it? Because then when they grow up, they might be, like...
ashamed.
Oh, yeah, like, because they didn't grow up with seeing, like... They might hit puberty, basically, and be really freaked out.
Because that's the one... I was thinking about this when I was walking in. I grew... Like, my mum's a swimmer, So she swims every day. So I grew up in female changing rooms at like the Prince of Wales Pool in Kentish Town. And I remember being young and seeing these incredible bushes, and everyone in my mum's like friendship group, you know, they all like obviously like their pubes are really long. So it was totally normal to me. Mm-hmm. And then I remember when I started to wax and was still going to this swimming pool, and like my mum and my mum's friends would like look at me funny and kind of mock me. Mm. And it is a very generational thing.
It's, well, it's fashionable because in the 70s there were merkins. People would like want to have like basically a pubic wig that made them look bushier, and it was a thing. It was like to wear it with pride. But it's I do think there's still a lot of shame associated with it. Like, you know, Madonna posted that photo the other day of her and her daughter hugging, and you could see is it Lourdes? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you could see her armpit hair, and like the reaction was so horrible and horrific, and like so many, like there were some people obviously going like, go Lourdes, go Lola, you know, and great, but there was loads of people just going like, disgusting, shave your armpits. And I just thought, God, we still are in a place whereby like women have like these expectations on them, and if you fall outside of that, it's still it's like brave almost, and it shouldn't be. Like, you should be allowed to shave them and not feel guilty about that, and someone else should be allowed to have as much body hair as they want and not feel guilty about that either, or ashamed about it. And the other thing I wanted to ask you as well was do you think that this is, I don't know how to say this without this being gross, but do you think that there's something about like the women shaving their pubic hair that's to do with like infantilizing them in a way, like making them look younger and prepubescent in a way? Because that was something that worried me a bit about it, was like, am I making myself, my body almost look childlike? And is that something to do with like the whole sort of fetishization of like young looking girls? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I do think it is really weird, and I've never wanted to have no pubic hair, and some of my friends, like, that's what they do and they love that, and I do think it looks quite weird having absolutely none. And it is, again, like, goes back to porn and people's expectations. When you see, even I, when I see like a woman with really long leg hair, I'm instantly drawn to it, and it makes me feel weird because I'm just so not used to that. And I don't know, it's really weird. It's like I've got this underlying stigma of like hairy women, and I wish I didn't, because it's like, it's so annoying that is like deep rootedly in me. It's so annoying when like a woman has long armpit hair and like they raise their arms and my eyes just dart over towards it, and I'm like a bit shocked.
Yeah.
And it is maddening, and that is linked to the infantilization of people wanting, it's weird. It is weird.
I do think it's fashionable again now though, because I have a lot of friends who have long armpit hair, and I think it looks quite beautiful in some ways. But I also think that being in a long-term relationship has allowed me to chill out about it. If I was single, I think I would spend more money on, like, preening myself.
But it's really interesting because, like, okay, so I have friends who, well, like, one of my best friends, her, when she was at uni, her boyfriend was coming up to visit her, and she didn't have enough money to get a wax, and so he transferred her money to get a wax, because that's how much he, like, didn't want to have sex with her if she had pubes when he was coming up. And this is, like, we were, like, 19, 20, so it's still, like, I do think men grow out of it, because I, now, what I was going to say is, like, having gotten older, men, like, my age have started to realise that it's bullshit, and it kind of makes no difference. And but I've turned down sex before because I'm like, no, my vagina's too hairy, sorry. And it's like, they don't care.
That used to be my boundary, like, it's like a contraceptive, like, go out with a bush and then you won't get with anyone.
Yeah. You see, like, security, you know you won't have sex.
Being on your period as well.
Yeah. But then at the same time, just to kind of flip that slightly, say, like, I was seeing a guy, or you guys were seeing a guy, whatever, and you know, you just started seeing them, and you just genuinely didn't really like pubic hair, and you wanted to be able to, like, be sexual with them, but you just didn't like the feeling of it, or whatever, and you asked your boyfriend or a guy, and you said, look, would you mind just grooming and just cutting yourself a bit short and being a bit neat, because it just makes it a more pleasant experience for me? Like, is that a terrible thing to just, like, it? If either way, like, if you're just actually considerate of your lover's sort of preferences, is that a terrible thing? I don't know.
That's a really interesting question. Yeah, because, and men do groom themselves, like some men, and so it's not totally like that women want to be hairless. More and more men now are, like, getting rid of their body hair. So that is a really good question. I guess it's just that it happens so much less, and it's not like a ideal in the media that men like have to groom their pubic hair. It's it's like, where does it come from for women? It comes from a male porn maker's ideal of what a woman should look like.
So basically, male porn makers, if you're out there listening, we need some like pube-filled porn as well, just to like redress the balance here.
Yeah.
So that people feel that like one or the other isn't right or wrong.
Yeah.
And in terms of this wider discussion, so you're making a documentary.
Well, it's a prank show.
Right.
So pranking, yes, members of the public, and we're doing a really, really, even though I say so myself, funny sketch on pubes, and it's to do with pubes basically causing an environmental crisis, pube shaving causing an environmental crisis, which I'm filming on Monday. But what has been interesting with that is because we're working with, you know, like older people that are slightly older than me and older feminists, and a lot of the people working on it have been very like, our line is shaving your pubes is bad, it's all because of the patriarchy. And I have said over and over again that it makes me uncomfortable that we're asserting that this is something that women do that's not their choice, it's something they're forced to do. And so that's what's really made me think about it, because like this week I've had quite a few healthy disputes with people where I've said that I wax my pubes and all of my friends get rid of their pubes, but I don't think we're totally doing it because of the patriarchy. So I don't want to like put out there that I don't want to shame women. And I think that's the big thing with feminism now, is that like, that's what makes us different from people my mum's age, I would say. I don't shame women if they get a boob job. I don't want to shame women if they get rid of their hair, if they get plastic surgery. You know, like, as long as it's something that you are doing with your body for yourself, I'm happy for you. You know, it's really complicated. But so I think the pube thing, it has been interesting kind of wanting to put something out there about pubes, but then not quite knowing how to have a clear stance on it, because mine is not clear.
But it sounds like this last, well, not last wave, but like this wave, whatever we're in now, it is more nuanced, isn't it?
Yeah.
There is no, you know, it's like when Piers Morgan really shames like Kim Kardashian for posting naked selfies, it's like, but what if she's doing that selfie for herself? I find it all quite confusing. I find it more triggering that he's shaming a woman.
Yeah, public. But then I do also think there's a line whereby if you've got loads of young women and young girls following you, and you have a responsibility to think about a little bit about the message you're giving, and are you saying to women, like, yes, go ahead, be naked, be proud to be naked, but if you're putting that up and getting millions of likes, are you saying to women that in order to be liked and in order to be popular, that you need to have an amazing body and show it off? Mm. And I don't know, I think it's quite a tricky line.
It's like if someone puts up like, you know, the ins and outs of their boob job, like is using that platform kind of irresponsible, because then you're encouraging more vulnerable women to do it who might not be doing it for themselves. It's like
It's muddy territory. It's, it really, you know, it's like the stuff on everything that's going on now with like Me Too and Time's Up. You know, these are conversations which are really hard to get to the end of, because you keep going off path and you keep kind of changing. It's like I went to see The Disaster Artist yesterday and I thought it was unbelievably good. I don't know if either of you have seen it. So funny. I have not laughed like that. I can't remember laughing like that at a film. But that day, all this stuff's come out about James Franco, and I left the cinema and I was like, I love him and I love that film, but I now feel really guilty that I love him so much.
I was going to move on to a topic which I've prepared and which I thought about, but actually, you just talking about that, it's reminded me of another topic that I wanted to use for a later podcast, but I actually think it's really relevant. So do you guys mind if I switch up? Which is like this whole idea of whether we can separate the artist from the art. And I think it's become so relevant recently because since the, you know, this whole Weinstein scandal has come to light, more and more artists, actors, directors, people that we've loved and admired and enjoyed their work of have been exposed as, you know, from the criminal to the just lewd to the just bad, you know, whatever it may be. There's a whole spectrum of this, what's been going on, but it's made watching a lot of their work and enjoying it difficult and conflicting. And so, but I kind of feel like, and this is where I'm willing to have my mind totally changed on this, but I kind of feel like we should be able to separate the art from the artist. And I sort of feel like if I want to watch The Usual Suspects with Kevin Spacey in it, it doesn't mean that I'm supporting him as a person, and it doesn't mean that I don't think what he's done is horrendous, but it's a film that was made with hundreds of people involved, from the writers to the directors. And he was doing a job, in the same way that if I found out that a murderer had been a bricklayer on a wall, I wouldn't like have an objection to like going by that wall or like using a bridge, because that person's work is not that person. But I do think it's confusing though.
Yeah, but I think it's totally that. What people don't understand, like, are forgetting is, like, House of Cards, for example, so many people worked on House of Cards. It was an incredible show because of the like unbelievable talent that was working behind the scenes on that. Kevin Spacey didn't make that whole series himself. So, and what was the thing that they've rewritten him out of? And also the Agatha Christie, the Christmas Agatha Christie special had Ed Westwick in it. And it just totally got cut all the stuff came out about Ed Westwick. It was going to come out on Boxing Day, I think. And it just totally got cut. And it's like, that was loads of people's first breaks. And, you know, it's a really...
livelihoods. But also, I think that's quite a dangerous place to be in, because it's a sort of trial before... we're losing this whole innocent until proven guilty. And with Ed in particular... And I might be slightly biased because he is someone who I knew many years ago, but I'm not trying in any way weigh in, because I have no idea whether he did or didn't do what he's alleged to. But I also think that, you know, to sort of trial and judge someone before they've actually legally gone through the process of actually being judged, and before you know, is kind of a dangerous precedent as well. And I like totally think you have to believe women, and, you know, we need to support people to come out and voice what's happened to them. But I also think just like completely like writing someone off and cancelling their shows and things like that, when we have no idea what's actually gone down yet, without them having a chance to have cleared their name potentially, is also a little bit muddy territory.
Yeah, I had a weird one recently where I interviewed Greta Gerwig for my other podcast, and I got loads of comments being like, I hope you asked her about her involvement with like Woody Allen. And I think that's like been in the press recently, hasn't it? She's been really kind of put up to answer a lot of questions, and I actually got quite defensive, and I replied to someone saying, actually, she's just directed her first feature film, like, I'm not interested in asking her about that. I wanted to just celebrate her and her film. And actually, reflecting on that, I feel like, did I have a duty actually to ask her about Woody Allen? But I also feel like, why is she so responsible? He did something wrong, she didn't.
Well, Woody Allen is a really hard one, because he's sort of still got the same stature and respect that he ever had, and never got tuppence for what a lot of people think he deserves. And for people like Greta Gerwig, who is a kind of acclaimed feminist, and all of the stuff that she's created so far has kind of been really... you know, female empowering and whatever, and Woody Allen to an extent, like, I don't know, it's a really hard one. I really understand why people are interrogating people who are going in Woody Allen's films, but equally, I love Woody Allen's films, and I'm like, he is one of the reasons why I started writing comedy, and that's never gonna change.
Do you know what? I feel like I'm gonna slightly like backtrack on what I said at the start of this discussion, which was that I think we should be able to separate art from the artist, because you just mentioning Woody Allen there, Emma, reminded me. I read one of the most difficult and heartbreaking articles which Dylan Farrow wrote, and in it she talked about how painful it is for her to watch an awards ceremony and see the person that she accuses of being her abuser being basically celebrated and lauded. And actually, so it's all very well for me to sit here and go, well, why shouldn't I be able to watch The Usual Suspects if just because Kevin Spacey is in it? But actually, for the person who's suffered at the hands of that person, just to know that people are just still out there buying their music, or they're watching their films, or that, you know, they're in some way like still receiving money and royalties and all the rest of it, must be really horrendously painful.
But I don't understand how Woody Allen is still doing what he's doing. I don't understand it.
Well, I think ultimately it's come down to he's denied it, and some people have chosen to believe that. And so it's so difficult, because I mean, I read her account, and for me it rang incredibly true. But a lot of people who will know him, will work with him, will just say he's denied it, he said this and that, and I choose to believe him. And, you know, I do think with the Me Too movement as well, and it's quite hard to say this as a woman, like, yes, believe women, but also individuals are individuals. And so, and I'm in no way, like, saying this about Woody Allen and Dylan Pratt, I don't know either of them. But I think there are some times when, like, men are also, some, can be trustworthy sometimes too. There are men I know that I would believe.
But then also, I think it's really dangerous territory, like, to, like, you know, when Lena Dunham came out with that
really badly timed press
release saying, well, I know this guy and he didn't do it. It's like, that was really not the right time to kind of stick an oar in from, like, a personal emotional point of view. And I thought that was really bad taste. But I feel like with Lena, I feel like she actually, I know she messes up a lot. I think she saves a lot of other people making the same mistakes because they see her do it. And then they think, oh, I won't do that.
Yeah, she gets all the punishment for kind of things that a lot of people are.
But I also think there's a big difference between privately knowing, like as she did, knowing someone and going, okay, I've had to make a choice here. I know you and I've chosen to believe you that you didn't do this. And actually going on and using your powers on a platform in a, you know, huge influence and platform that you have to publicly say that and in a way kind of shame
the woman.
And kind of go, I think this person's a liar, basically. I think there's a there's a huge difference between those two things. And we all as individuals have to make up our minds, like, you know, down to tiny things in life, like, you know, when you're like in the school ground and you know someone hits someone and they, or you've got your kids and they go, that person, you have to decide sometimes in life, like, which side to fall on. But you don't ever know. You never know unless you're that person there. You can never know the truth.
And 100%. Sometimes you don't need to say anything. Like, I feel like that's what her issue is in some places, is like it's a weird kind of thinking that she needs to say something when actually you don't need to say anything.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think? I feel like I've sort of changed my mind a bit there, but what do you guys think about? Do you think it's okay? Like, let's forget Woody Allen and let's forget even the people who've not gone through a process, but someone who's actually been tried and found to be guilty and, you know, or has confessed themselves and said, yes, I did do this, and something that we is either criminal or that we just find completely unacceptable. Would you still feel comfortable going and seeing a film with them in it, or directed by them, or music by them?
I think, like we said, films are a different thing, I personally think, because a lot of people make it. If a CEO of a company who sells a product did something awful, I would boycott that product. But I think with a film, it's like, unless that person is the main part and in your face, I probably would go and see it.
It's interesting because I was talking to my mum about The Disaster Artist and James Franco today, and she was like, well, you refused to watch Manchester by the Sea last year because of Casey Affleck. And I did, because I don't know why, but that was before all of this stuff had happened, and what Casey Affleck did, like, really resonated with me and really made me very angry. And I was like, it's true, but I just really love James Franco, and he's been like one of like my favourite people. So it kind of, I don't think I have a one catch for all kind of answer for that, unfortunately, because there are levels of the things of what people have done, and there are scales, and like people who have been found guilty, and I don't know, it's kind of.
Would you feel more comfortable seeing a film that had been produced by Weinstein because he's not in it? So you don't have to see his face and it's not as in your overt. As opposed to like an actor who was in it.
I was just thinking of that quote that Sarah Silverman did about Louis C.K. because they're best friends. Mm. And she basically said, and I'm going to paraphrase it really badly now, but she was basically saying, you can still love someone and totally, totally disagree with an action that they've done.
Mm.
So essentially what you're saying is like, you're allowed to like James Franco actually deep down because they've had an influence on your life, but you can also think he's a terrible person. Like, those two things can both be true.
So it's not black and white, basically.
It isn't.
Yeah.
Two statements can be true at the same time.
Well, I'm sure, like, if you, you know, take that to the extreme, you know, a mother whose son is a serial killer, I'm sure there's a part of that woman who will still love that person and still care for them. I mean, that's taking it to a whole other level, but can absolutely abhor and despise everything they've ever done and, you know, hate them for that and be disgusted by it, but also have a love for them. And I think it is, you know, it's not like we know these people, but relationships are complex, and in a way relationships with people on the screen, people who make art that we love, and you were saying, you know, for example, Woody Allen, how much he influenced you, it's maybe not one, no, it's complicated.
But maybe he just shouldn't get, he shouldn't get any rewards, financial or on a red carpet.
Yeah, and with him, it's like, well, it was his old cinema that really did inspire me, and now I do just think he, like, is kind of making too many films and they're losing their value.
I just think he...
I don't think his newer films are very good.
But also he ultimately what should happen is that he should go to court and this should be tried properly with a jury. And if he has done what he's been accused of doing, then he should go to jail.
Yeah.
And then that changes things as well, and you have to look at it again. But I think it's terribly sad that someone, you know... If let's say that he has done it, that he just gets to walk around. I think that's wrong, and I think we need to find better systems for holding people to account for their behaviour.
And I think that's the huge problem with rape and assault, is that it's so difficult to prove. Again, it's not black and white, and like, we're going to see this a lot now. It's really, really difficult to put these men away, and so women don't want to come forward and have their whole lives kind of exploited and their whole sexual history. It's like totally understandable, but I mean, it's a whole nother thing, but that's this kind of whole fucked up circle of why he's gotten away with it. People like Casey Affleck are still working,
and
Mel Gibson as well.
He's on tape, like, saying the most abhorrent things and doing
Donald Trump.
But also, you look at someone like, I mean, I find Mike Tyson, the fact that he's like a convicted rapist and a violent man, and yet it seemed to be kind of like slightly cool and iconic to have him in your, you know, music video, or to have him, like, people are like, oh my god, it's Mike Tyson. I just find that weird that he's even allowed to come into this country and get money doing I don't know, it's just it is a very weird sort of a very weird way that we have, where some people are allowed off the hook and some people aren't. So, like, someone like Chris Brown seems to have just got off scot-free for Rihanna.
He's got a Netflix documentary on the go at the moment. Of celebrating his life.
We just, it's like, as a nation, we forgive some people, and then other people we just don't.
I know. And I hope it, I mean, this is a great time, I think, in history, what's happening now. And my parents keep being like, I don't think anything's going to change, but I really think it's a great time. And so hopefully in 10 years' time, the infrastructure and the kind of power systems that we have in play will have changed, and so it'll be much more difficult to get away with this stuff.
And importantly, which is what people keep saying, which is really important to say, I think, is that we're not just talking about, like, for actresses and actors and people like that in Hollywood. Like, what you hope is that what's happened will filter down, so that when you have your domestic workers, your you know, marginalized people, your street workers, people like that, that they will actually feel that they have more of a voice, and that they are able to also stand up for themselves.
Exactly.
Because obviously what we're seeing is like a tip of a tiny little iceberg of people who tend to have much bigger support networks, was actually, you know, violence towards women and oppression of women is happening on such so many levels across the world.
And that leads me on to my topic, actually, which goes totally leads on from that, is Oprah's speech at the Golden Globes about exactly that, about Me Too and Time Is Up, and that big campaign around a new dawn on the horizon. I read a stat on Twitter that said, I mean, it was on Twitter, so do we believe it, but someone did a poll basically asking Americans on the whole if they would vote for Oprah as president in 2020, and 48% of people said they would vote for her immediately. And I think they did some sort of calculation that meant it would beat Donald Trump out of the White House or whatever. And I just wanted to bring up and ask you your opinion, really, because I don't know for sure what I think. Is it fair to kind of assume that Oprah even wants to be president? Like, has anyone asked her? And also, just because you are an amazing person and you have an amazing career, does that automatically make you a good politician? Or, I don't know, it's just this mixture of kind of celebrity and politics at the moment I find quite an interesting one. And I wondered if you guys thought anything about that, whether you thought actually, yeah, we should get Oprah in the White House.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that the 48% of people who voted that, well, a lot of them are probably saying, well, I hate that Donald Trump is in the White House, and he was, he worked, did a reality TV show and is a property mogul, and that is now president. So they're like, well, if he can do it, then obviously Oprah can. And it's kind of maybe symbolic of, you know, that those people who are like, she deserves it so much more than him because look what she's done in her career and she's just so much more impressive, so we would rather, if a celebrity were in the White House, it would have to be Oprah. So maybe it's not necessarily like they want Oprah. It's kind of what are they saying in that? It's that like this celebrity has now become president and he's fucking everything up. Why isn't someone like her doing it? Because she would be doing it totally differently.
It's like we're all really desperate for like, we're like, we see someone, we're like, she made a good speech. Yeah. Please, please let Oprah do it. Someone, anyone. Just, and we're just all like, get really excited. I mean, I got really excited. I mean, I watched the speech. And I cried, and it really resonated in so many ways, and it was amazing. And then I started seeing people on Twitter saying exactly that. And I have to admit, I got really excited because I was like, oh my God, this could be the answer, the thing we've all been waiting for. It's going to solve everything.
And it's the same with Michelle Obama. Like, there's this huge pressure on Michelle Obama to run for president because people were so upset, you know, that 48% probably more so upset with Trump that they want, like, these kind of incredible, influential, inspirational characters to be there.
Yeah. Oh, I hope it happens then.
Well, she has actually been asked. So over the years, because I think way back when she interviewed Trump like a long time ago, but she was asked a few times and she's always said that she's not interested in it. But then her long-term partner, apparently, I mean, we can take all these things with a pinch of salt, but apparently on the night said... when he was asked, you know, would she run? He said, well, you know, it's down to the people. And if the momentum was there and it was clear that people wanted her to, then she'd definitely consider it. But, I mean, it's not from her mouth and who knows how whether that was taken in context or not. So it would be interesting to get her opinion on it. But I can imagine that if you suddenly have this swell of people saying that you want someone to do, they want you to do something, you'd have to then at least think about it in a different way. So hopefully she's thinking about it.
Because I think the other thing that, like... has kind of gone out the window with this is like we should be saying, well, what does she know about politics and running a country? But Donald Trump didn't have a clue and he's now doing it.
So and The Rock's going for president now too.
But normally you would say, and in this country we really do much more interrogate our politicians and say, well, what do they know? Like what gives them the right to kind of make these choices for us? But that's gone out the window in the States. So they're like, well, you know, she's incredible. Let's just get her in. But I do think we have to ask, you know, what does Oprah, what, obviously
isn't,
nothing.
But isn't that part of the whole, about? Isn't that part of the whole, like, we don't need experts anymore, we just want celebrities? Like, across the board, not just in politics, but exactly what you're saying, it's like, it doesn't really matter what you know anymore, it's just, like, how popular you are and how much we like you.
Is it that younger people maybe do care about someone being, like, on an emotional level more in tune with them?
Yeah, and that's, I think, is quite a problem, because... you need to know about economics, you know, like the way that policies are structured, the infrastructure of government before you go into politics. There's a problem with career politicians. And I think in this country, we kind of like breed people to be MPs and then one day the leader of a party. And that's a problem because then they don't have the kind of life experience, which they could then offer kind of a different narrative within government. But I also think it's dangerous saying, oh, just because they're interesting or charismatic and funny or charming that they should be in power, because it's about having the balance, you know. These people are making huge decisions, they need to be equipped to do it.
It has always been there. People, like, I don't think it's a new thing that people are looking for politicians, and in particular not just politicians but the leaders, so your presidents, your prime ministers, to be relatable and charismatic. I mean, I do think that was part of why Tony Blair got in as well. He looked a certain way, he spoke a certain way, he appealed to people in a certain way. But you always had the balance of that. So they had to also be, you know, have proved their worth as a politician, to have gone through certain things, had a certain amount of experience. And I think that is what we've kind of lost now. Not so much here, but certainly in America. And I think potentially, you know, in times to come, that will come over here as well, whereby we don't even care. And again, it's not just politicians. I think we don't really care about people's experience and knowledge anymore. We're so obsessed with celebrity and we're so obsessed with, like, could they be my friend, that is become, it's trumped it, well, excuse the pun, but it's that has trumped the kind of experience and knowledge, which is
a
bit worrying.
But then there is an argument that he's just like the face of it, and like someone like Oprah could also be like the face of it, and actually there's a lot of people behind the scenes, aren't there, like working on things as well.
But they are, you know, it's not just a title role. Like, being the leader of a country is just, it's massive, and we've seen that Trump just doesn't know.
Also,
even down to the language that he uses.
Yeah,
he,
like,
doesn't know how to
I tried
it.
To get the presidency and I did first time. Do you know that tweet where he's like, I tried
when he
it
said,
and I won
like,
it.
I'm like really smart. Like a genius.
Yeah, it's just kind of, it's, you know, it's proving that you kind of, you need to have some sort of experience. So I don't know. I don't think there should be like one CV that fits what you need to have done to be a politician, but I think it's dangerous saying that you can just do it.
I blame Arnie. Famous. Arnie was the first, wasn't he? He became the governor.
Reagan.
Reagan. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I take that back.
Like, was that before? Yeah.
Yeah. Reagan. Course. But we forget
because
I grew up thinking of Reagan as a politician, as a president. And then when you read about like what happened at the time and how he came up and, you know, was this actor, then it's quite shocking, actually. It's kind of, there's a lot of similarities with what's happened with Trump.
And I'm interested, you know, it could keep happening here. I'm interested to see like the people that kind of want to. Because I think
Russell Brand kind of got involved, didn't he, through his influence. And actually, I don't know, I kind of like sometimes his truth, the true news, the truths, or whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. But I understand why people thought, what do you know?
I think here in England, people reject that quite a lot. So with Russell, and again, with Lily, who, I mean, I love Lily Allen, and I think she's brilliant in a lot of what she says, but I think people don't like someone, in this country, we don't like people who we feel are talking out of turn. So if you're a pop star, if you're a comedian, like, stick to what you know, you're not allowed to have an opinion, which you know, that seems to be more of a British thing, maybe.
It's not really fair, is it?
No, but I think that's a big difference between here and the States, is that in America you can kind of have like five different careers and be flourishing in all of them, and you're allowed to do that. And I always say that comes down to the university system. You don't pick one degree to master. You do lots of different things. And here we kind of get boxed into being a lawyer at 18 and then that's it. And then you stick in your place. I totally agree. So I think that we have a kind of problem here with it just being politicians doing what politicians do. And everyone else kind of pretends it's not happening.
Yeah.
And then we don't really resist as much here, I don't think.
But it's also a tool, a way of like shutting people down. So if you don't agree with what someone says, like the thing that people say to Lily a lot on Twitter I see is that they go like, oh, you silly little girl, stick to making your shit music or something like that. And she will often reply like, I'm a 36-year-old mother of two. In what way does that make me a silly little girl? And it is a way of people shutting people down because they don't like what they're saying. Because actually, like, musicians have got involved, you know, with politics and charitable works and things like that for a long time. It's not all that new.
And I think I don't know if you agree, but I think everyone has a responsibility. If you have a platform and you're not using it in some small way to do something, I think that's very strange.
And you're not running, like, people I heard, they're not running for office. That's the difference. Yeah. They're just using their platform to have a voice, and people don't in any way have to read it or listen to them. I think the thing is when you start having people going for office and running for parliament and, you know, becoming actually powerful, influential political people, then you have to start looking and going, okay, what do you actually do? What do you actually know? What's your experience? Are you someone we can trust to make good choices on this?
But this is why they're all really bland.
Because
all the kind of interesting, colourful characters, well, I don't want to offend all politicians, but a lot of them get put off because they're like, why would I want to non-stop be abused in the way that Lily Allen is and told that I'm wrong? And, you know, it filters out a lot of the extroverted people.
Yeah.
And then we end up having people like Theresa May, who just, like, doesn't even have a brain in her skull. She's like a robot.
Oh, my God. On that note, thank you so much, Grace, for getting it off your breast with us. I always feel like I've shed a few pounds after I've done an episode, so I'm, like, lighter
I have to say, talking of shedding pounds, I feel like I've put a few on, but I feel like I've also found my food sister, because Grace, you're the first person that has enjoyed a snack of frozen peas with me, so thanks for that.
You're both really weird.
We can see your show, it's Riot Girls on 4OD.
Yes.
If people want to catch up and watch that.
Yes. Can't wait.
And we will also, you can also follow you on
Instagram and Twitter, Disgrace Campbell.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thank you so much to Grace for joining us, but also, of course, big thanks to you for listening. Don't forget, you can click to subscribe to ensure that you don't miss any of our future episodes.
And make sure you do join us next week, because we have the brilliant author, host of BBC Radio 3's breakfast show, the incredible Clemmie Burton Hill.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.